The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Gil and Heidi Bowden, who recently returned serving in Novosibirsk, Siberia. Did I get that right?
Sure.
Yes. Okay.
Now, I'm going to say something. I've never done this before, but when you walked in the room, I was looking for your parents. We usually don't get missionaries your youngness. Let me just put it that way. I was really quite surprised.
We're 10 years younger after serving the 18-month mission.
That's right. It's very interesting. Okay, let's talk for a few moments about how this – let's set this whole process up. You've decided that you want to do a humanitarian mission. Do you request Russia? Is this a surprise? Is there a reason that you go to Russia? Brother Bowden, what's the answer to that one?
That's where the Lord wants you to go. We both were prompted to go on a mission, and we just kept thinking, talking about it, and we decided, yeah, it's time to do it. So we told the Lord, we'll go on a mission if where he wants to go. So we put our papers in to go anywhere he wants to go. But in the back of our minds, it's kind of what we thought we'd like to do.
Sister Bowden, when the envelope comes, is it just a regular size envelope? Is it a manila envelope that you open up and find out where you're going? Do you recall the day
it's a white envelope.
Just a regular type envelope. Mm-hmm. And who read it? Sister Bowden, Brother Bowden, who found the initial destination
Our
there?
Our daughter picked it up. Jokingly, she always said, I know where you're going. You're going to Siberia. You know, and she jokingly. So when she picked up the mail, she picked up our call. And then when she brought it, she was so anxious to find out where we were going, but she had no idea we would really be going to Siberia.
How old is she?
About she's 28.
28. Oh, she okay. was living with us with her husband and mm-hmm. her two daughters at the time while they were building a new home. And so she had picked up the mail for us because she was so excited for it. But when we opened it up and it did say the Novosibirsk mission in Siberia, she said, how did I know? She was very shocked, but she said, how did I know? I knew that. I knew that. Didn't I know that? Well, she really didn't, but she had teased us about that.
Okay, when you say Siberia, I'm from a generation that all the prison camps, everybody was bad in Russia, went to Siberia, and that was just the end of it. And I just assumed that Siberia was this little place where they had sent all the bad people. This is not the case.
No, you know, I went over there. I've been taught all my life in school and stuff that everybody spread out. It's very small villages. You watch the movies on TV and it shows them little houses and spread out. But I tell you what, it's a very big place. I was just shocked how big it is. It's big cities. Novosibirsk is over 3.5 million. We's in a city, Tomsk, anywhere from 600,000 to 800,000, 250,000 college students. Outside of there, there's villages, and outside of that, there's miles and miles. Our mission is the size of L.A. to Seattle to Chicago.
Wow. Okay. Do you have your own automobile? Do you take public transport?
No,
how do you?
Public transportation. We never drove an automobile for 18 months. It was getting on buses or taxi or tour buses or airplanes or trains. We rode the Siberian Express 7 times.
I was going to ask about that. That's where Novosibirsk is known for the Siberian Express. Is that correct? That's kind of where the headquarters are of the train station. So that's fun to be able to say, I rode the Siberian Express. But we'll get to that in just a minute because I have a mental image of that as well. But let's talk about when you open that envelope and it says Siberia, does it tell you what you're going to be doing? Do you have an idea then of what the mission is?
Well, you open it, it says you've been called to serve as the Novosibirsk mission. It's overwhelming. I couldn't finish reading it. I get it right now. I get over the emotion was so strong. So, but then after the emotion, you read on. It says you've been called to serve as to the humanitarian service mission, and it also states that you also will be called to serve to help the mission president, whatever
assist
the mission president, whatever capacity he wants you to serve. Which he found plenty of things for us to do.
Does that include proselytizing?
Some couples did. Ours wasn't so much proselyting as we assisted the missionaries. All the young men, when they'd contact the female investigators, they couldn't meet with them. So we were involved in hundreds of meetings with the elders, the sisters. They'd love to come and meet with us. With being a senior couple, they'd involve us because of our experience, and people would want to know a little bit more about the church. So we was involved in hundreds of meetings. And then we was also involved in mentoring the leadership and the branches, also members. And then we was involved with English clubs they had of sharing English. Hmm. And the list just goes on and on. Any special thing that he needed done, ordination or overseeing something or a priesthood thing we was involved in.
Is the mission home right there where you were, or where is the mission home located?
The mission home is in Novosibirsk. We's in a city about 4 hours bus ride away to the northeast called Tomsk. There's 10 cities in the mission, and Novosibirsk is kind of in the center south.
Okay, the letter comes, and you are to report when? What day do you get off that airplane in Siberia?
Well, we received it, in November?
Yes.
And it said we should report the MTC March 31st.
So you got spring at least to look forward to.
So we're looking at spring there, and it says it will be there for 10 days. And then we'll fly and arrive in Russia April 14th.
Moscow.
And we go to Moscow and fly to Moscow, about a 27, 28-hour flight. And then we fly to Novosibirsk, a 6-7-hour flight. And then we stay overnight there, and then we bus to our apartment. It's about a 5 or 6 hour ride, and then we were there.
Sit your bow and tell me about that apartment, that first apartment. What were your feelings when you open the door and have the luggage under both arms, and here we are? What do you see?
We have an entrance, and in the entrance is an elevator, or on one side is some stairs. Our apartment was on the 7th floor. And so with suitcases, the stairs is not an option. I have a little bit of claustrophobic. And going up the elevator was hard for me. And then we get in the elevator, which is a nice-sized elevator for most apartments in Russia. Ours is.
We found we had one of the top 100 in Russia.
Okay. I was fortunate to be able to, the Lord was looking after it, me. He was giving me the strength to do that, because I would have seen a small elevator that they usually have in most of the apartments, and I would not have went.
You would have carried the suitcases up yourself.
I would have carried the suitcases up there myself. And I did do that many times. I used the stairs. If the elevator had more than a capacity in it, I would not get in. But I did learn to take a lot of elevators. We had other senior couples that we got in their elevators. And one time, Elder Bowden was stuck in the elevator. And that scared me, because I wouldn't, and the lights were out, and he was just stuck there.
Just wait until they fix it.
We had elders, young elders that were stuck in their elevators for hours at a time.
She treated me so good for 2-3 days after that. It was almost worth doing it 2-3 times after.
That's right.
I was never stuck in the elevator.
Okay, you open the door, and here is your apartment. What do you see? Is it modern? Is it brightly colored? Is it drab? What do you see?
We were told you are lucky because you have a newer apartment complex. So I was excited about that. And it was. It was newer. But there was many things that were not finished. The doorway in the inside was not finished. The tub had no.
Tub was in the middle of the room. It wasn't touching
middle of the
wall,
room, no... and mm-hmm. the shower sprayed out all over. So yeah. They had some problems with the apartment, and it was small. And it was one bedroom, mm-hmm. but it was very cozy and it felt good.
At least it was warm.
It was warm.
They're at central
yes.
type.
The thing
heat.
That really gets you is the doors. They all have two or three steel doors. Your security is your apartment, and no one can come in. Even the police can't come in if you don't let them in. You have to unlock one door with a key, and it's a big steel door, and then you open the next door with a big steel key. And then you have your main entrance has a steel door coming in, so you feel like you're going into your cell.
Wow. Okay. How about shopping for food? A little supermarkets, so what we would term a supermarket, just little shops? Or
we had a small store that we could buy our supplies, our groceries, just on the corner where we had our apartment. Everything that you bought had to be carried. And the packages that you bought it had to be purchased so that you could carry these, and we carried a lot of groceries up the elevator, and sometimes I would send Elder Bowden in the elevator, and I would go up the stairs with the groceries.
It'd be warm by the time you got up there, I'll
yes.
tell you.
Yeah. But we did do a lot of walking and hauling.
The first branch meeting you attend, Elder Bowden, what went through your mind as you sit down, and how many members, how many men, how many women, how many children? What was typical?
Well, we was in a branch of about 150 members. There's only four families, so most everybody's single, either a husband that's a member, a wife's a member, or teenagers, or that's mostly singles. There's only four children. I think when we left, there was six children, but three or four is the only ones that come. But so you have a completely different environment or arrangement than we have here in the States. And then going in the first time is no one speaks English. And we have the elders bringing us in, introducing us, and everyone's saying Strasvice and all these other words. So what did they say? And they're introducing us. Minya Staration of Bowden.
Yes.
Minya Savut. I can't even say yes. it.
Minya Savut.
You can change that one.
Sister
Yeah, we'd go and say Minya Savut, Staration of Bowden, and they'd laugh at us because I said it wrong. But it was just really a different world.
So the elders and the sisters are really conducting most of the meetings and speaking at most of the meetings,
or
do the members participate?
The members, the branch president is very active, and it's functioning. The elders are there to support and do the missionary work. They kind of oversee and are support, but the branch is functioning by itself.
It's amazing.
A lot of them are just new. The one branch president, he'd been in about a year and a half. The branch had been organized for about 10 years, and they just changed about a year and a half ago. And he still learned his job, but a very capable person, but still learning. So the elders are there all the time in the meetings and just kind of assisting, mentoring. Sometime for priesthood, there'd be enough elders, and other times there wouldn't. So they're just kind of there to mentor. But mostly the missionaries are bringing the investigators. First meeting we went to, there's probably 45 to 50 members, about 50-50, men and women, maybe a few more women. The elders have four or five investigators there. We meet everybody, and every week after that, for the whole time we was there, there's always five or six investigators. The change over the 40 or 50 is different each week, and it's just all new people, and very few of them speak English.
Interesting. What's Relief Society like every Sunday? Not speaking English or not speaking Russian, you kind of get a pattern of what's going on and what they're saying.
Yes.
Or is it, if we had just walked in there, it's just the same as everywhere?
It's just the same as everywhere. There's not as many members, but the spirit's there. and the spirit's strong, and they are trying to follow the counsel of the prophet all the time. They are giving service. We made some quilts where they tied quilts without quilting frames, and it's a trick, but they learned how to do that, and we made quilts. We made, I think it was 56 quilts for an orphanage. They're doing service. They're serving one another. They're helping the community, and they're happy, and they're kind. And I felt acceptance. They loved me right off.
You mentioned, Brother Bowden, 4 or 5 investigators every week. Do you know what the rate was of the conversion rate? Is it really difficult for the elders there? Or is it how is their success?
I don't know the actual numbers and figures on that. I never did hear that, or anyone ever dwelt on that, so I don't know what the actual figures were. We participated in 18 baptisms between two cities, and most of them we'd meet the young people, and there's a couple older people that we'd met. One woman we helped baptize in camera was 83 years old, and had a great story to tell back in the earlier days, but some of the people would come to English, or they'd come to church, and we'd start meeting with them and take 6-8 weeks, and they'd get them to the lessons and then fellowship them from the other branch members, and they'd be baptized. And we watched that happen 8 times in just the one branch there in 1 year. And so the process, you know, was a 6-8 week.
Just the same as just about anywhere.
Yeah. Yes.
Are there more obstacles, though, because of the poverty, because of the cold, because of the economy? Is it tougher?
The word of wisdom problem there. Is
word
a big
of wisdom
obstacle.
And the culture. They're, you know, you see, when I first walked in there, what I was surprised to walk in there is they look just like everybody in America. They're just people.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like people that I'd seen here in the America and Utah. A few of them, I thought they looked more like the people I knew than the people I knew. they look so much. But when they, and you sit in meetings, they talk, just different words are coming out of their mouth. But, you know, you go to a church meeting and a priesthood meeting or at least study, there's not too many different things they'd be talking about than we talk about. Mm-hmm. You just don't understand the words, but same subject. But the obstacles of investigators, yeah, there's really a struggle. These people have been raised a different religion, or they've been raised atheists. And, they're searching for a truth. They know there's more truth. So a lot of them, they know there's something more. And it's just so uplifting to talk to somebody and see the Spirit touch them. But other people you meet that they don't believe in God to start with. And so there's a challenge there. And then they start accepting the gospel. Their relatives, their friends don't accept there's a God. And so we've had several members that did decide to join the church, become members. They were shut out from their family. They were disowned. They were
shunned by everyone around them.
They were just totally, it was a big sacrifice for them.
And then there's another sacrifice when it gets severe cold weather for the elderly. It's hard for them to get to their meetings. Mm.
Let's talk about the cold weather in just a moment. You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Bowden, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Siberia. And it's cold in Siberia. How cold is it in Siberia?
Well, it averaged minus 32 to 37. We've seen a week of 42 to 47, with one day of minus 40 or minus 50 is what we've so close to seeing when we're traveling. But in our apartment, there's several times we looked out the window to get ourselves primed for the day, and it'd be a minus 45, minus 47 one morning.
That didn't stop you. You still put on the coats and the layers and just go out anyway.
Yes, everyone does.
Just went out and did it.
You just go out.
Now, you mentioned you're riding a bus for 4 hours. Is it a modern bus? Was it, I mean, I have visions of maybe an old gray, broken down.
We had all varieties. We actually went on 87 bus rides between the cities and conferences and visas, and we was actually on 87 tour bus rides. Or I say tour bus.
There's
between the cities, 5 to 7 hour rides, but they're on like our tour buses.
Mm-hmm.
Some were brand new buses, just as modern you'd see right here. Some of them were 10 years old. We rode one. It was probably a 1948, 1950 bus. And a three-hour ride we had took us 6 hours. It kept breaking down. And this is the middle of January.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the fuses sure. blow, and he'd stop. He stopped one time and had to fix, I don't know if he's fixing an alternator or what, had another bus to stop.
But there was no heat.
Yeah, he never did have heat. We're bundled up, and the ice was about an inch and a half thick on the inside of the windows. When you breathed at each other, your breath was hurting each other because the ice in the condensation would hit you in the face. But this is inside the bus. In the winter, a lot of these bus rides, you could not see out. If it was warm, it was still the ice, so you'd try 5 or 6 hours, and it was just like not having no windows at all. The summer was beautiful, though. In the summer, it beautiful view of country, and you got 5 hours sitting just looking at it. But some of them older buses didn't have air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be 95 outside, the sun hitting the bus, she's 100 degrees inside, and nobody had open windows.
So you have the contrast of 50 below in the summer and 95, or in the winter, and 95 in the summer. There's that much of a difference in temperatures.
Yes, it is, and it doesn't fluctuate during the day. You know, your temperature in the morning, in the summer, changes a little bit. In the winter, it doesn't change 2 or 3 degrees during the day. You're cold all day, and you're hot all day.
Now, the sun, it's your way up north, so the sun never sets in the winter. Is that correct, or is it long, long days?
Yeah, in June, July, the sun would be up around about 4:15, and it wouldn't set until 10:30. But in the winter, close to 10, 9:45, the sun finally comes up, and before 4 o'clock, it's already getting dark.
It's dark. Let's talk for a moment about why you were there. You mentioned that you kind of served at the whatever the mission president wanted you to do. What kind of tasks were you given to do? What was probably the most memorable for you?
Actually, there's two things. One is our humanitarian one,
mm-hmm.
and then we had to help the missionary. But
right.
Anytime we had ordinations of elders or people changing positions in the branch of elders, come president or counselors, or that we kind of overseen that. Any special messages we need to do or training, lots of training. They have people with big hearts and want to know, but they've never had the experience of being part of the church. So there's a lot of training every week of
things that we take for granted that they
just basic agenda. I remember one meeting we sat in and they's asking how to make their apprenticeship meeting more effective. So I was trying to teach them how to do an agenda and how to set their agenda up and priorities and then to get out to visit people. And for sacrament, how to split it up between the counselors of each month doing the talks and have an executive secretary of the ward clerk take care of the prayers. And it was a major stress for this guy. I got to do the prayers. He'd been all of his life, he'd never did anything like that. It was a major thing for him. But he got
this
used
better.
To it, and it was calm. But they've had no experience at all being part of the church, so every little thing is just a major thing. Call someone to be a Sunday school teacher and tell them, you got to teach these kids every week. It's like, whoa.
When you think about it, even when we're called to be a Sunday school teacher or a primary teacher, even those of us who've been to church all of our lives are somewhat intimidated about that. Imagine being a member for a year or two and not having the situation that we have here. You were very welcome, I'm sure, wherever you went, to be able to offer some assistance and advice.
We were treated as if we were the most royal people in the world. Every place we went, people just treated us as if we were something so special. Like someone called them up and told them, treat these people so good. We just treated so good, we couldn't believe it.
Well, once they gain that testimony, and then they've been a member for a year, and they go into accepting a calling, the Lord works with them, and they do wonderful. I had a good friend that was primary president, and another good friend that Relief Society president, and they had not been members very long, but they functioned and they did well, and they had the Spirit with them, and it worked.
You still have the Sunday school program? Do they still Would you do that in a small branch like that? Would you still
in the city of Tomsk? We did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of the other cities, the branches are just missionaries of the branch president, and they've got one city. We had 5 members, and you know we'd have our
5 active members.
Our sacrament meeting, we'd have 5 members, maybe 3 or 4 investigators.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have sacrament, and after that, we'd have a Sunday school where it was basically the adult thing. There was no children, and so just kind of 2 meetings together there. In Tomsk, it was a full branch capacity running, doing all the things they do. Like I said, with 24 children to do primary and Sunday school, it's...
That's a great story. You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Bowden, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Siberia. Kind of a two-faceted mission then. I can only imagine thinking of young elders or young sisters that far away from home. You are welcomed by the members, but you're also welcomed by the missionaries. Here's somebody we can visit, we can talk, we can tell our troubles to. We can. That must have been quite an experience as well.
We learned to love so many of them. It was such a great experience to get to know them. We have 8 of our own children and have 8 in-law spouses from the children, but we inherited about 33 other.
We learned to love the missionaries more than.
We fed them, we ever imagined.
We watched
them. We met. It was just fascinating to see how these young 19-year-old people are turning the kids into these spiritual giants before your eyes, and just the things they do, the spirit they carry. And we had them. We fed them quite often. We met with them in meetings. We assisted them. We answered questions for them.
We loved them.
They were willing to do anything for us, and so, you know, they helped us get taxis and buses and addresses and interpret, and they were our lifeline, and we were their connection of home, I think, so it was a good
We fit. Spent Christmas with them. They would come over on Christmas Eve and then go back to their apartments, and then on Christmas Day they would come. We spent Thanksgiving. We always had a nice meal. Thanksgiving was hard to find a turkey. We did not find a turkey. We joked about them that we were serving them pigeon because there's a lot of pigeons in Russia. But we actually had found some really nice big chicken breasts that we had for Thanksgiving, and they loved it. And for Christmas, we had them a rotisserie chicken. A whole chicken, each one of them had a whole chicken, and they loved that. And it was fun. And actually, in this last Christmas, the missionaries said that it was their best Christmas they ever had, I thought about that, and I thought, well, it was the best Christmas I ever had, too, because the Spirit was there. It wasn't all about giving and shopping and the hustle and bustle of what we have at Christmas now. It was about Christ. It was Christ.
I think we've seen those young men and young women at their best. As parents don't get to see them. We got to see them when they're at their best. You know, the things that they maybe want to share with mom and dad because they can't. We were there. They could share it with us. They had to be their best because we were the ones that they were supposed to be
accountable to
and help. And so we got to see them in a way that their parents didn't get to see them, but their parents always wish they were.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them at their perfect condition.
But
really good to love them, and it was really, really a great experience. I think that's probably one of our favorite experiences is the ones we had with the missionaries, the dinners, the walks, the meetings, the talks after. And I think one thing that was really great is they'd have these investigators, and they were trying to teach them, and the Spirit's there, and they was teaching them, but they were only 19-year-old kids, and people weren't believing them. And so they turned to us and asked us to say something, and we dig into our lives and our experiences and share something. And it's just, that's what I wanted to hear. You know, they didn't have that experience, but we would say something or we'd come up with a one-liner that they just, I was looking for something just like that. And, you know, so I think they appreciated us for our experience, but we appreciated them for their youth and their
and
strength.
Yeah, and their diligence in preach my gospel.
You suppose it's one of the hardest places on earth to teach, do you think?
I believe it's one of the most challenging missions in the world. I definitely do. It's one of the most challenging things I ever did. The culture is so different. I mean, they're good people, but the culture is so different. I think the rest of the world spins right and they spin left. And these people are very traditional. They're very strong in tradition. And they're looking for truth. And if you speak truth, they hear it, they feel it. But you've got to be in tune with the Spirit. The number one thing over in Russia is you have to do it by Spirit. You can't do it by yourself. In any way can you do it yourself. If you don't depend upon the Spirit, you're running into a solid wall that won't bend or break.
Let's talk about humanitarian then. We know that you've served at the request of the mission president. Well, what are some things that he had you do? Were you able to go out and kind of say, you know what, we need this, let's do this?
Or... Well, what we did was we actually had several different bosses. We was over there with the mission president helping in the missionary effort and helping because it covers an area, like we said, as big as Seattle, L.A., Chicago. Mm-hmm. The mission president couldn't be aware. So senior couples are kind of the lifeblood to keep things watched out and support and the bridges. But the humanitarian thing is working under the presiding bishop. And as the organization is a humanitarian effort out of Moscow is the headquarters. And we work under an area in the country director and under the Eastern Europe presidency under humanitarian. So we got two different bosses there. And they're really not associated or communicate that much with each other. They get the directions from the brethren, but they don't. So our humanitarian was to go around and find organizations that are already helping people and see if we can strengthen them and help them. In their, we had four things is relieve suffering, improve quality of life, become sustainable, and bring recognition to the church. And so we would search out people that already were doing a good job or trying to do a good job and just needed that little extra help to do a better job or reach more people. Orphanages, rehabilitation centers, infectious disease centers, tuberculosis centers. It's amazing in Russia how many people have tuberculosis. You know, the poverty and the living conditions, most children have it. And it's a 6 to 18 month process of living in good, healthy conditions to overcome it. And most of these people, like these centers and stuff, they're living in old beds that are 30, 40 years old. The barracks or the buildings they have are old barracks from World War II that's been painted. And the conditions are just very poor. And what money they do get and support doesn't go very far. So we was able to help them raise their standard of life and their quality of life to help them with it. But we helped some centers of women that do, One hospital is a maternity center. It has 6,000 babies a year. Mm. And they had just a couple pieces of or a couple sets of equipment to help with the prematures, the problem. So, you know, they had anywhere from 11 to 30 babies a day with two beds to take care of intensive care. We had one orphanage that was feeding 129 kids, and they didn't have a stove at work, and another one that didn't have a freezer at work. They had one day's supply of food. So, you know, naturally their need was just basic needs that we take for granted. And we just helped them obtain that stuff. A lot of them just needed beds. We helped one rehabilitation center where children were abused, their wives and families broke. But they took the children away, and these children were sleeping on wood beds with blankets that had to be 15 years old. So we was able to help them buy some beds and blankets and improve the quality condition. These kids had a life to start off with that someone cared.
It sounds like then it's a struggle just every day to live for many of them, just to stay alive.
There is many that are that way, yes.
There's very many of them. You're there's just amazed many. That they even have any hope, but they do. They're very strong. There's a very, very, very great need. And the country's probably trying to do all it can, but it's just such a big country and such a big need that they can't do it all.
So you're working through humanitarian mission then in Moscow and kind of getting, if you need something, you write to them or you call them.
Make
or how does this project, how does this happen?
What it is, it's European mission and the headquarters is in, or the office is in Moscow, and there's an area and country director, and then it's, like I said, it's run by the First Presidency as a Eastern Europe mission. There's a computer program the church has designed. It's just, it's really a great program to come up with called CHOS. And you create a project. You go out and meet the organization. You obtain what their name is, what their purpose is, what their need is. You fill out a form on the computer and you send it into the Moscow, and they review it. If it can be approved by them, it's approved. If it's more of a dollar amount, it comes to the area, or it comes to Salt Lake. Depends on the dollar amount. And it's all done over the computer. Now, when we first got there, it was a little different. We had to fill it all out on paper, and we had to mail it and send it to Moscow, you know, and a week later it's there. And then they review it, and then they send it. And it was just a lot of paperwork and a lot of work. But they come up with this new program, and a couple hours, you can pretty much fill out a application and send it, and they review it the next day, and they can approve it or send it on.
And project in a couple hours.
We did one project. It took me 6 weeks to get the projects just through all the paperwork. And when we left, we submitted 9 projects in 1 week, and most of them were approved within 2 weeks. There's a couple because the money might have had to go through the area. But there's several of them that I did. I'd say 6 of them were submitted, approved, and being processed within a week.
That's amazing. That's wonderful to see that we can be so responsive, respond so quickly to the needs, and how gratifying it is to you to watch these things happen, to see the beds delivered, or to see the equipment in the hospitals, or to see the smiles on the orphans' faces. I mean, not trying to be maudlin about this, but what a great blessing it is for you to see this happen.
One of the greatest things I've seen is we went into a little orphanage. I mean, we've seen so many great things, but one thing comes to my mind right now is so many of these little children are there. They've been abandoned. They really have nothing except for there's a bunch of people that are caring and taking care of them. If it wasn't for them people, and they're not doing it for the money because they don't make no money, they're helping these kids. And we come in there and they tell them, hey, these people here want to help you. We help them either acquire some furniture or something to cook with or some medical equipment or some beds. And then when you go back to close the project and see that it's being used and stuff, all these kids are there to sing a song to you, or they make a picture and give it to you, or they thank you. And you can just see the difference it made in the life, seeing that somebody really cares about them as an individual. You'll never meet them again, but it makes a difference in their life.
It made us proud to wear our tag.
I can see that.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Humanitarian service.
We
felt that we were privileged to be part of this, to be able to be part of it, to make it happen.
They're making a real effort to adopt. There's a lot of people trying to adopt. We've seen many kids adopted. We did one project that's just closing right now in near Coots through Elder Sodom and his wife, Leanne, that they were working with. And when the government got through and recognized it and wrote a thing in the newsletter, it said that the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, or the Mormons, just got through helping this project, and it stated what we'd helped them do and that, and we're so appreciative of them. And they go by LDS or Mormons, LDS, Let's Do Something group.
Oh,
and it was really elating, to uplifting to know that we did a project, and that's actually what they come away with. LDS means Let's Do Something. But that's what we felt, is we met these people and helped them stuff. When you went away, it's like that light of hope was shining in their eyes, and it made a difference in their lives. And just that alone was something worth doing.
Anything else you can think of?
I seen a lot of, well, the reason that we went on a mission is because we wanted to help bring the church out of
obscurity
in the mission that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt a real privilege to be able to be part of that, to be able to bring some recognition to the church and strength.
One of the other things we didn't ever talk about here, too, is we had a responsibility to help promote families and family home evening.
Mm-hmm.
So we helped develop the Family Richness Program from English into Russian and distribute it. And we taught many, many families, probably over 500 families, how to have family nights. And we introduced it to orphanages and these centers that do how to have family nights within their organization. And he's very interested, new material, very excited to see it. And we helped teach him how to do that. That was a lot of fun.
Family enrichment program.
And strengthen the family and just show them family's important. And many of these children, even though they were orphanages, they never even knew who their parents were, they still had a great desire to be part of a family and be a family. The number one thing I come up with the mission is we're all people. We went over there on faith. I'm not a computer expert. I'm very literate on computer, but yet we did all these projects. And we met all these people and was part of all these things, and it was just all of faith. And the Spirit built a bridge. It's just, it didn't matter how qualified we were.
Yeah.
The work qualified us.
Yeah, the Lord qualifies you.
And we had fantastic experience and success, but it was a great thing. And the humanitarian thing is what draws me back. I would go back in a minute just to see how much more we could do and help, because it really brings out the love to Christ. You know, you think your Savior's love, and you see it in these people, and it just makes you feel good that you did just a little thing that made a big difference in their life.
Well, hopefully you have inspired through this today many other people to talk to the bishop about a humanitarian mission and to maybe decide if in a few years let's be ready to do this in our family. And bless you for your efforts and for the many people whose lives you have blessed. It's been wonderful. You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we've been blessed with Brother and Sister Bowden serving in Russia, in Siberia. We appreciate you coming by today. Thank you so very much. This has been Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel.